For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Thank you for having me. As Taigen mentioned, my name is Bo, and I'm the Tenzo, the kitchen manager here at Ancient Dragon. I don't know if I should mention, but this is the first time I'm giving a Dharma talk, so I'm really in the beginner's mind mode right now, because I'm like totally a beginner at this. I've been sitting here at Ancient Dragon for a few years now, and in that time I've heard, you know, a lot of Dharma talks. And I always appreciate how much the talks, almost without fail, sort of accentuate, deepen, inspire my practice. So it's a real honor to be sitting here delivering a talk to you. And my wife suggested, to kind of allay my nervousness around this, to say, you know, this is an offering. And I also consider it sort of collaborative, even though, like, I'm going to be talking for a little while. It's the holiday season, right? and I don't know how you feel about the holiday season, but I'll admit I'm sort of into it. I like the trees. I like the lights, the gift giving. I'll admit to even enjoying the music a lot. Like, I'm someone who is like singing Jingle Bells in July. So this time of year is very comfortable to me. A part of this time of year, it's a season of giving. We hear this phrase a lot too, right? And if you're like me, your email inbox maybe is filling up with appeals from various groups asking for your help, your support. This week, you know, I received emails from climate change groups, immigrant rights groups, equity and education groups. So this is all to sort of enforce for us that, or reinforce for us, that there's a lot going on in the world, that the world needs our help, which we talk about a lot here, and I appreciate that we sort of acknowledge the help that the world needs, that there is no separation between the world and our practice. While acknowledging this, that the world is sort of crying out for help, we also attempt to keep in mind an important question, which is, you know, what is the world after all? This was a question that we thought a lot about in a Rohatsu Sesshin, like a 5-day retreat we did a year ago. That question kind of came up repeatedly. This question of, you know, the world needing our help, are we separate from the world? I guess this talk is a little bit about what to do, how to help, because this is something I've been asking myself with increasing urgency. And I imagine people sitting in here are asking themselves that question quite a bit too. to kind of throw some, this question has become more important to me over the last several years. And I'll say that reading Faces of Compassion, but our teacher here wrote this book, Faces of Compassion. And there's a section, and I was reading this book while my wife and I were living in Amsterdam a few years ago, and I was feeling a little disconnected from home and living in a country, the Netherlands, where, you know, sometimes it didn't seem like I could so easily help. And there's a section in Faces of Compassion about Albert Schweitzer. And I didn't really know that much about Albert Schweitzer. But at the end of that section, there's this line, the sentence that sort of has stayed with me. Schweitzer stated that he kept in his heart as a motto one word: service. So service, helping. I've been thinking and trying to keep that sort of as a vow, as a motto for myself. And that's been helpful. And it's this necessary starting point, but there are, not surprisingly, more questions to ask. Just over a week ago, we completed a Rohatsu Sesshin where service was one theme. The question arose for us in the midst of this five-day retreat, who do you serve? You serve somebody, after all, knowingly or not. So who? To whom do you point your energy of service? Besides this question of whom we might serve, we might also ask, again, relevant to what I'll be talking about, how do you serve? What is your attitude for service? What is the nature of your service or helping? I'm concerned here with this specific question of how to help in a way that does not reify or reinforce roles, that brings together, after our meal chant here, helper, helped, and the act of helping or the outcome of helping. So we chant giver, receiver, and gift as these being very much sort of co-identified or something, to use a fancy term. So I'm thinking of that too for the helper, the help, the act of helping. So how do we serve? How do we help while keeping our aspiration towards emptiness or wholeness? What is a kind of helping which remains committed to, after Dogen's Genjo Koan, studying the self, forgetting the self, being activated by the myriad things? From this perspective of the Bodhisattva, can we serve without at the same time servicing the self? Tell me if I'm going too fast. Am I going too fast? Okay. So in light of these questions, these big questions that I've been having, I want to read a story from The Hidden Lamp, which is Stories from 25 Centuries of Awakened Women, edited by Florence Kaplow, who recently gave a talk here, and Suze and Moon. I think this is like my favorite book on Buddhism. It's an amazing book. 100 stories of Buddhist women often struggling to practice against the obstacles set before them by patriarchal societies. The stories are told with a lot of drama and wisdom and humor, and each story is accompanied by the commentary of a contemporary Buddhist woman practitioner. And those, for me, are equally sort of enlightening as the original stories. But here's the story. One day, Layman Pang and his daughter, Ling Zhao, which I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right or not. Good. Were out selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," remarked the layman. So maybe it's worth reading it one more time. One day, Layman Pang and his daughter Ling Zhao were out selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," remarked the layman. What context do we need in order to understand the story? I would argue not a ton. There's a whole set of these Layman Pang stories, for one thing. We can say that the author wasn't so concerned with character description in the story. We know that he's a layman. We know that he's a Pang. This is the whole... the whole family. So there's a whole family here. The Layman Pang, his wife, son, and daughter. You know, a nuclear family, 8th century China style. They were famous lay practitioners, and practitioners of Chan Buddhism, which is a precursor to Zen in Japan. Notably, we have a set of Layman Pang stories called The Man of Zen in our library, and it indicates that the Pangs lived during a particularly tumultuous time in China, one marked by wars, floods, famines, heavy taxes, and rapid inflation. We happen to live in a time of wars, floods, famines, heavy taxes for some of us. Famously, at some point in his life, Layman Pang took all of his possessions, loaded them onto a boat, rowed the boat into a river, and sunk the boat. Regarding this incident, our book, A Man of Zen, notes somewhat wryly, "Unfortunately, we are not told what arrangements he made for his family." So, a man of Zen indeed. So we can dive into this story a little bit, right? I used to teach creative writing classes, so I'm sort of tempted now to go around and ask about the strengths of the story and the weaknesses and what might be improved. I appreciate the humor of the story, okay? That's what kind of had me sit down with it at first. To kind of go back into the plot, though, the layman and his daughter are out selling bamboo baskets, and they're traveling, we don't know, in a village or a city. They're going over a bridge, obviously, the layman first, for whatever reason. Maybe he's always running a little faster than the daughter, or maybe that's the custom of 8th century China. Or maybe this isn't the first time that the layman has fallen, and Ling Zhao is simply in father falling preparation mode. In any case, the next thing that happens after they cross the bridge is he falls. And we might call this after, there's a thing in, you know, when you're talking about stories, Freytag's pyramid, right? And I'm sure maybe some of you are familiar with this. It's like this pyramid that has like traditional sort of narrative arc. I would argue that this is the point of the story, the introduction of its problem or conflict for a protagonist. And I'm just going to call Ling Zhao our protagonist for the sake of this experiment, knowing that between cultures, narrative is practiced in very different kinds of ways. But Ling Zhao is presented with a very clear problem here, right? What to do. And she doesn't have like Alexa to ask like what to do in this case when your father has fallen. I've included some really dumb jokes in here, by the way. So that's more for me than you. But we're familiar with this problem, right? Fallen people. I often go to the Whole Foods in my neighborhood, and there's often folks outside of that Whole Foods asking for money, asking for a few dollars outside a store owned by a man who's worth 109 billion of them. We encounter people who have fallen in more metaphoric ways, too, of course. A friend who's fallen into depression, a relative into addiction. Perhaps even we have fallen, you know, or we've had occasions where we've fallen. And sometimes when people fall, we don't know what to do. Sometimes we do know what to do. Ling Zhao seems to know immediately what to do. There's no hesitation. And so the climax of the story seems to come in the very next line. Ling Zhao makes her decision to throw herself on the ground next to her father. What is she doing? It's a surprising, funny response, right? The layman asks then Ling Zhao after she throws herself on the ground, kind of reasonably, what are you doing? A good question. He's still on the ground, after all. His problem of being on the ground has certainly not been solved. Ling Zhao replies, I saw you fall, so I'm helping. Not, I'm trying to help. Ling Zhao is confident in her helping. She knows that it's the right thing to do. To finish the story, then the father offers that ambiguous remark. Luckily, no one was looking. There are many possible ways of reading this. I like to imagine that, in fact, like hundreds of people were around them. That was a very busy marketplace where he fell. So the big question, of course, is whether Ling Zhao is really helping. I think she is. That would be my claim here. And the main component of her helping, the first thing, is her willingness to say yes to what's happened. Let's think of saying yes as a precondition of helping, of service. It's seeing someone who has fallen, in other words, and not saying no, that person has not fallen. As another example, it is reading something in the newspaper, a story about segregated schools, for example, or something like that, and saying perhaps after more study, yes, that is the case. Yes, I see that. I understand that. This actually reminds me, I performed improv for, you know, the last 19 years or something like that. And we had an improv show, my group, a long time ago, it was maybe 15 years ago, in North Carolina. And someone in our group at the very start of the show, we were used to performing on very low platforms, low stages. But for whatever reason, this show, we were performing on a high stage. And one of my, you know, fellow cast members or whatever in the show, like, stepped off the stage, like, fell off it, like, at the very beginning of the show. And we had a kind of choice to make there. And so for the rest of the show, we found various reasons in scenes to sort of throw ourselves off the stage. Someone chased a ball off the stage. Another person, like, went digging for some treasure or whatever. So that became, you know, a crucial thread, a crucial theme to the show. And this was something we were taught in improv to do. There's this central practice of improv, I don't know if you're familiar with or not, this phrase, yes and. It means, in the context of an improv scene or show, that you say yes to whatever is happening or whatever your scene partner has offered, whatever the show has offered. If your scene partner comes onto stage and declares that the both of you are hot dogs, then the both of you are hot dogs. And that means that if you came into the scene thinking that the both of you would be pieces of pizza, you have to drop that idea for the sake of the scene going forward. Otherwise, the show becomes mired in argument about reality. And you don't, we were taught that audiences don't like to watch you argue. Maybe our culture is proposing that that's not the case so much anymore. But so under this rule of yes and, when our, you know, when our friend accidentally fell off the stage, we followed him. We did this, you know, throughout the remainder of the show. By doing this, we honored our friend's so-called mistake. We took that initial piece, and no matter how accidental, or his falling, no matter how accidental, we made a pattern from it. Or, as another word for pattern, a little bit of art. In improv, we're taught that the best way to take care of each other is by supporting each other's moves, however accidental or however foolish they might be. Maybe this is a little bit of what Ling Zhao is up to here, honoring her father's accident by making a pattern from it, by making, dare I argue, some art from it. There are no mistakes after all, or there is one continuous mistake. So Ling Zhao doesn't say no. She sees her father's fall, yet says yes. And this is, again, an essential condition for helping. No helping can happen without it. If you turn away, if you stop listening, that is not reality. Another essential element of her helping is she doesn't seem so hung up on it, on her helping. I'm still kind of figuring this part of it out, but Ling Zhao's act is at the same time extremely idiosyncratic, that is personal, but also empty of, I would say, ego, or maybe we would say self too. Her action is both responsive in a totally particular way and selfless. Ling Zhao, in this act of throwing herself to the ground, does not seem preoccupied with a particular schema of helping that has some set of rules about how to help. Nor, therefore, does she seem preoccupied with some idea of herself as helper and her father as he who is to be helped. In fact, her act sort of radically undermines this by, in a way, not being all that helpful. Or at least helpful in a way that might be, at least helpful in a way that we don't typically think of helpful, right? Her act is surprising, which is, I think, is crucial. I have a feeling that she was herself surprised by her decision to throw herself to the ground. And this kind of surprise is a really good thing. It's good. It's a good way not to get caught up in helping. To make an act that might not typically seem helpful by surprising ourselves, by working outside of our typical habits, even our habits of helping, we beg the question, well, is this even helpful? While also staying sort of more deeply in the moment of helping. But there's more to our act, too, I think, besides this embodiment of yes and besides its sort of radical undermining of what we conceive of as being helpful or not. Because I do think her act is helpful. In throwing herself to the ground next to her father, Ling Zhao is throwing herself toward his point of view, toward his fallen position. She is unhesitatingly taking on his position, no matter how fallen. Joan Sutherland, in her commentary on the story in The Hidden Lamp, argues that Ling Zhao's act is one of intimacy, of being willing to get on the ground, quite literally, and attend to whomever or whatever is there, to listen if that person needs listening to take in the experience of that person, whatever it may be. With her act, Ling Zhao is embodying this principle of non-separation between ourselves and whatever is happening. Again, this kind of helping, at least for me, does not seem an obvious choice because, for me, a point of reference for helping is a story like the one about the Good Samaritan from the Bible. I was raised Catholic, so I encountered this story quite often. In that story, if you recall, or if maybe you're not familiar with it, A man is robbed, he's beaten, he's left on the ground. Two men go by the fallen man without helping, including a priest. Then the Good Samaritan comes by the man, tends to him, sets him on his horse, and brings him to an inn where he's taken care of further. Prior to the telling of this parable, Jesus presents the following sort of guidance: that one may inherit eternal life by loving, quote, your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Now, in thinking of these stories together, we might conceive of Ling Zhao's throwing herself towards into her father's position as an act of loving her father as herself, or as loving herself as her fallen father. There might be other readings of the Pang story as well, obviously, depending on your context, which is important to keep in mind. I read the story to my nieces, for example, who are in third and fifth grade, and besides calling the story really weird, they proposed that Ling Zhao throws herself on the ground so that her father might not feel so embarrassed. Which seems like a very middle grade experience of this story, right? Perhaps everyone from their own particular context has a spin on this story, which I would appreciate hearing about after, during the comments period. In any case, all of this is not to argue that lifting a person from the ground would be an inappropriate response. If Ling Zhao decided to do that, I wouldn't say that's wrong. In fact, as I was writing this talk, sitting in a cafe drinking coffee, a woman crossing the street into the cafe, or, you know, hadn't quite reached the cafe, but she stumbled and fell, like, as I was working on this.
Did you go out and fall?
Well, this is the thing. So, I was kind of like, oh, but my talk, right? Well, but she, real quickly, she fell, as quickly as she fell, she pushed herself up from the ground. Yeah, right. So I wouldn't have had any time to really help her. But I don't think she would have wanted my help, I'll be honest, right? It was pretty clear to me that she didn't want anyone to see that she had fallen. And I don't know that anybody did. Every situation is particular, and every particular situation calls for a particular response, or a whole host of particular responses, I don't know. We can't be too prescriptive, and I want to avoid that. What is being proposed with this story is not literally falling on the ground is the correct response every time, but it might be worth trying out. Before, rather, that to respond at all, we must be willing to say yes, and also to encourage responses in the spirit of wholeness, responses which obliterate this idea of helper and helped. No, we can't say what a universally appropriate response might be. We can only describe what Ling Zhao did, how she responded, and then ask questions about her response. We might also tell a little bit of more of the story. This is something that's fun to do in literature classes, you know, go beyond the ending. For example, maybe after sitting on the ground for a little bit with her father, Ling Zhao stands up, pulls her father to his feet, then lifts him in the air. Ling Zhao is very strong. Lifts him above her head and flips him up into the sky. Or maybe Layman Pang stands up, lifts Ling Zhao to her feet, and they dance. Maybe the Good Samaritan, having done all that work in the Bible, travels across time, travels across various religious stories, stumbles upon Layman Pang and his daughter on the ground, helps them onto his horse, and takes them to that famous inn. Maybe the Mother Pang and the Son Pangs, where have they been, come along, having sold their allotment of bamboo baskets for the day, see the Layman Pang and his daughter on the ground and decide to join them. Now the entire Pang clan is there on the ground, and maybe seeing that this is a beautiful day, they decide to have a picnic. Or maybe after Ling Zhao throws herself to the ground, she and her father decide to sit in meditation for a while, because this is a big part of their lives, after all. And other people passing by, perhaps caught up in their busy days, are suddenly struck by their peaceful and upright poses, so they decide to join them. One by one, people join them in the sitting on the ground, and therefore, a pattern is made. Another pattern. Before long, an ad hoc kind of sangha has been formed, simply out of all that falling. A friend of ours recently had a baby, and unfortunately, the baby was really struggling was born, but really struggling. They were scared. The baby wasn't breathing when he was born. And our friend was actually telling this story. He came and stayed with us during this last Rohatsu a week or so ago. And we were just eating chips and salsa with him. And then he told us the story about his son having this trouble with being born. You know, these kind of moments where you're surprised at the suffering, the trouble that people have. But you appreciate hearing their story. Anyway, his baby did start to breathe, but still he had to be in the ICU for several days after his birth. His parents obviously were very worried. We were kind of having a discussion about how sometimes it's difficult to get doctors to treat you like regular people, like human beings. And that's nothing against doctors. Like, I understand that their work is really difficult. So it makes sense that maybe sometimes they have trouble doing that. But a moment that really mattered to my friends when they became decidedly less worried about their son was when our friend, his wife, was in a wheelchair, and a doctor, while sort of reassuring her that their son would be all right, came and knelt next to her in the wheelchair and made that sort of eye contact that she obviously needed. It was more than like what he said. His gesture was reassuring. His falling, if you will, his willingness to kind of come down and be with where she was in her suffering a little bit. And this is a gesture, you know, I know Matt teaches grade school, and I'm in school to teach grade school to be certified to do that. And that's an important gesture to make while you're teaching kids too, right? Is to kneel down next to their desk and make that sort of engagement with them. In the context of in our practice, I think of bowing, and I've been thinking of bowing as a sort of mutual falling. From Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, this is how Shunryu Suzuki describes bowing. By bowing, we are giving up ourselves. To give up ourselves means to give up our dualistic ideas. To bow means to pay our respects to something which is more worthy of respect than ourselves. But when you bow to Buddha, you should have no idea of Buddha. You just become one with Buddha. When you become one with Buddha, one with everything that exists, you find the true meaning of being. When you forget all your dualistic ideas, everything becomes your teacher, and everything can be the object of worship. I think this is the nature of Ling Zhao's falling, the spirit of bowing. That in falling, she is giving up on dualism, the separation of herself and her father, of herself and anyone or anything else. That with this act of falling, she's becoming one with everything that exists, including one with her father, her mother, her brother, the bridge, the bamboo baskets. The bamboo baskets, which serve as a useful metaphor for the story itself, existing in these kind of intricate patterns. She becomes one with the telling of the story as well, and its innumerable retellings across time, and therefore one with those folks looking on, both in the story itself and outside of it, including us here sitting in this little room in Chicago. Thanks to this story, ultimately, and its sort of miraculous arrival here, we find Ling Zhao and her father falling over and over again across so much time, so many places, 12 centuries in China, Japan, California, Chicago, innumerable places otherwise. From this experience of falling together across all this space and time, of watching Ling Zhao and her father fall and falling with them too, we begin to have a sense of this universal, how deep and wide it might be, which explains ultimately one meaning of Layman Pang's final sort of ambiguous expression. Luckily, no one was looking. Beyond cracking wise, I think he's trying to tell us that of course no one is looking. How could there be anyone in particular amidst all this falling, all this helping, all this harmony, all this cooperation, to borrow a phrase from Dogen? How could there be anyone in particular in this accident from which we might make beauty and art? How can there be anyone looking when we are saying yes, when we are surprising ourselves out of old habits, when we are willingly throwing ourselves toward other people's suffering? How can there be anyone in particular when we are helping in the spirit of wholeness? So, I encourage you to keep falling. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Yes.
Lovely talk. Comments, responses, questions for Bill, questions for Ling Zhao.
Please feel free.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what the thing that really came to my mind was during the climate strike, I guess a couple of Fridays ago, we had a die-in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were at the meeting and we all laid down and died in honor of the people who have actually died.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really the main thing that it made me think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, in the midst of sort of thinking about this story, I've thought about lots of different kinds of falling, but I hadn't thought of that, so I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yes, Jamie.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
Of course. Yes, please.
If that's okay.
Of course. Yeah.
At the beginning of your talk, there were a few terms that were cycling around.
Yeah.
And they seemed like they were kind of interchangeable in that moment. As there was hope, there was being the giver and the receiver, and then there was service.
Yeah.
And for me, these all start very different things. And I was kind of like sitting in that a lot of the time you're talking. And so for me, I like confess a certain reluctance toward the word help.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
That I know what someone needs and know what can give it to them.
Yeah.
And that so that I can walk to somebody and be like, oh, you're, sad or you're experiencing depression, like here's a sandwich.
Yeah.
Like, enjoy the sandwich. Like, I helped.
Yeah.
And then I can feel some self satisfaction with like having help.
Yeah.
And so for me, I don't think that's the way you were using help, but to me that was like how it bounced off. And it just brought up for me I think a lot of the things talking about, which is, service to me is a very different reaction, and it seems so much closer to that throwing yourself on the ground.
Yeah.
Which to me, when you read the story, it seems to me that that's like the grand joke and the grand irony of that story, which is she says, I'm helping.
Yeah.
And really, like, she's serving.
Yeah.
And like the real wisdom of that is not that she's like gone and picked up these bags and like picked them up and dusted them off and my assumption
of health would
be, and I think you brought that out. Yeah. Rather, that by throwing yourself on the ground and saying, I'm helping, she's pointing to the kind of very irony of thinking you've been helped.
Yeah.
And of the necessity of, like, real help is service in some way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, anyways, I just wanted to share that.
That was kind of my reaction. Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to say. Oh, I really appreciate that. I mean, if there were, like, terms swirling around from, each other, it's because I share this sort of, like, reluctance around, or sort of same ambivalence around some of those words. I agree, like helping can be a problematic sort of word. And that's why as I was thinking about this, I came, that harmony, like cooperation, which is, Dogen has this essay that's like the four integrative methods or something like that. And so that helped me think about it in a different way, because cooperation implies like that there's some consent there, right? Like, and so, and some like, effort to make harmony and also effort to like do away with what might be a hierarchy between like helper and helped, right? Like, cause I'm interested in the same thing. Like, I don't want to do, I wouldn't want to perform acts that are presumptuous and again, like these habits of helping, I think are worth looking at. Like if we have a habit of doing that, then what's the surprising thing we might do that can kind of undermine that or introduce a new way of helping into our like, toolbox or whatever. So I share some of that ambivalence certainly. Yes, wait. I get a call on people maybe. Yeah. Wait.
Well, not a call on the I noticed that she doesn't say I'm helping you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Right? So it seems like what she's doing is obviously being present to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Is she helping her father? Is she helping the situation? Is she helping herself?
Yeah.
So like when you're present to the situation, perhaps she's serving her father. Is she serving or helping? things that are not.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. I hadn't considered that. Yeah. Like, she's helping the whole, a whole thing there.
It's impossible.
Yeah, totally. Yes, Mike. Oh, sorry.
to continue on this question. I really enjoyed that thought about being presumptive about wanting to help, because I so much, when someone is distressed, I want to help them, and so what ends up happening is, of course, I don't know what person needs, I can't know that, but then I paralyze myself in getting the thought process about, like, what could they need? Oh, gosh, I'm not doing the right thing, and I stall. Mm-hmm. And I find that when I drop that and I get out of my own way and I either sympathize or I listen and I can be present with that person, it's much better and beneficial for both of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a thing that I'm working on in my life, but it definitely resounded. Also, I wanted to thank you for your talk. Always have a very, your humor is very much appreciated. And it always comes around in a very meaningful way.
Oh, wow. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Thank you. And just to add, you know, it's like, yeah, that effort with people and I there's, as I mentioned, it's like climate change. I think, like, you know, what do you do? And I don't have an answer to this, but what is, like, Ling Zhao's helping in the midst of, as an answer, you know, not the only answer, but as a way to be amidst an issue that can feel so overwhelming, you know, and I don't know. But I'm interested in knowing, you know, and exploring those kind of surprising and, you know, yeah, funny. I think more funny ways of helping, too. Like, because there's a joy in that, too, you know. And maybe other people that watched her throw herself on the ground were like, yeah, and they were laughing. And it was like, you know, that's okay. That's a good thing, probably. Yeah. Phyllis.
Thank you. it's well in the comic book that's the little girl has a dog and somehow they can talk to each other.
of course.
but you know, nobody else can understand the dog. So the dog has a really bad haircut. So it's like a messed up bang.
It's tragic. Oh, it's something wrong with the bangs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a dog was laughing at her. So the little girl decided, you know, she cannot make other dogs stop laughing at her dog. So she decided she would mess up her own bag. But the other little dog still laughed at her dog. The human looking funny doesn't help that situation at all. Mm. But what happened was her schoolmate started laughing at her. And all of a sudden, the two of them are perfectly happy.
Because they're both being laughed at.
Yeah, it's okay now, because we're going through the same thing.
I love that. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
So I just want to share.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Oh, thank you.
just to help.
Yeah. No, I absolutely.
That Ling Zhao is in the Lotus Sutra. There are 33 forms of the Bodhisattva compassion kanon, and one of them is called what kind of basket?
Bamboo.
One of them is called Bamboo Basket Kanon, and is patterned after Ling Zhao. Oh,
wow.
So there's a form of Kanon, of the Bodhisattva of Compassion, that's named after Ling Zhao.
Wow.
She was, you know, she became very important in the Chinese Buddhist iconography.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Well, and there's that other story, which is also, you know, a famous story of like her father announces that he's dying, and she's like, no, I'm gonna die. So she like dies before him. She like decides to die. She like doesn't kill herself. The story is just like she died, and he was like thankful like that she. So she does like lots of interesting stuff. In other words, yeah, yeah.
So thank you very much for a lovely.
Thank you.